Luke Wright at the Imperial Bento.
Hello and welcome to our podcast.
Yes, our new podcast. Well, our old podcast clumsily rebranded under a new name.
What is the name of our new podcast, Joel?
The name of our new podcast is Joel Stickley and Luke Wright at the Imperial Bento, which I will explain in a moment. Since we last
lots has happened
in the last few months. We last did a podcast in May. Is that right?
It was in May. It was, yeah, because I did one afterwards with Molly Naylor.
Oh, of course you did. While I was away on honeymoon,
she was sitting in for you, but then you never came back. it's sad.
That is sad, isn't it? So since we last recorded a podcast, I've got married and I've been away on honeymoon and I've come back from honeymoon and you've had a baby.
Had a baby.
You haven't then given the baby back. That's more of a permanent change. That's not like a honeymoon.
It's not like a honeymoon. No, it's not. No.
You get to keep the baby. Get to keep the photos of the honeymoon.
You can't keep the honeymoon. It'd be implausible to take the whole of Greece around with you in your pocket.
Although,
given the way science is going, John, technology, I wouldn't be surprised if you can do that before too long.
I would actually be surprised. I mean, you talk about advances in science, that's actually quite improbable, isn't it?
Yeah, fair enough. Point taken.
So, since we last recorded the podcast, I've got married, I've been on honeymoon, and I've moved house. I've moved to Long Eaton, which is a town on the Nottinghamshire-Derbyshire border, and you're still in Norwich. So the practicalities of us recording a podcast become slightly more difficult.
So now, what we were going to do is meet up hilariously, like we were Dave Gorman or something, and meet up halfway between the two points and, like, record the podcast on a Tuesday, like, every day there, you know, at this restaurant, the Imperial Bento, which is a restaurant.
It is in a lay-by on the A17, next to one of those petrol stations that doesn't have a proper logo and is just someone's idea of...
It's someone's dream, Joe. It's someone's dream that someone had the dream to open up a petrol station, but they didn't want to suck the corporate cock. They didn't want to pay dividends to the corporate dollar, other than of course, buying
the oil companies.
And they were like, I want to have my own, a little garage of my own somewhere, and I'll put it here next to this restaurant.
Are you suggesting that the restaurant was there first? And that was the stimulus for opening the garage, that someone saw a small Japanese restaurant in a lay-by on the A17 and thought, you know what this needs? This needs an independent garage. Because when people stop for their noodles halfway through Cambridgeshire, they're going to want some petrol as well.
But you can't try and apply logic to people opening up their own shops, because it does seem to be like this sort of stupid British traditions, things that, like, British people do that no other person would ever do. Like, opening shops is one of those. Like, in my village, where my parents live, right, who I don't live with, it's like this little chintzy kind of East Anglian village that used to sell loads of antiques, and all the antique shops are closed down because Lovejoy got off telly, and it started being all gnarled and getting bummed in Sexy Beast, and so that all the shops have, like, turned into things. The things they sell in these shops, there's a shop, right? There's a shop that sells tickets.
Tickets. What does it sell tickets to?
You know, like in London, you get, like, those ticket shops, and they go, you know, you get them sort of in Tottenham Court Road area, and they're like, you know, get your tickets to see Kylie Minogue or U2. It sells tickets. Now, my argument is that
anywhere near a venue?
Like, no. It's like tickets. It's just says tickets. But, like, you wouldn't travel to buy tickets. I mean, we've got the internet now. People buy tickets on the internet, surely. Who would go into a shop? So I was looking at this. I said, that's ludicrous. And so my wife was like, well, they must run like an internet site out there, which in itself doesn't make sense, because you can run in that site out of, like, a cupboard. You don't need a fucking shop. And, like, but, like, there's no, like, web address or anything like that. I mean, it's got an email address. You can order your tickets via email.
That's just the same as writing them a letter, though. Yeah. I mean... It's ridiculous.
There's a shop that used to sell teddy bears. Didn't last, Joel. It shut down.
I'm amazed. And the thing is, somewhere, there's a bank that has given those people a small business loan to open that shop. And then you wonder why we're in the mess we're in.
The mess we're in. There weren't no Joel. Joel, I think we're in the mess we're in because of the greed of the city and bankers who aren't like real human beings. They look like human beings, but underneath it, they look like them aliens from District 9. So there's an independent garage next to the Imperial Bento, which is worth making the journey for just itself. The Imperial Bento wasn't there. Incidentally, the Imperial Bento used to be called the Oriental Bento, didn't it? Which rhymes, I prefer that. But Joel reckons that's a bit racist, so we're not allowed to call it that anymore.
Well, no, it's not me who's decided that. It's the owners of the cafe. I didn't go around there and force them to change their name.
Restaurant.
I'm not a serial rebrander. Don't just go around making people repaint signs. That would be weird.
It'd be fucking great if you did. I reckon there'd be a BBC 4 series in it. There might even be a BBC 3 series in it if you put some snazzy music and got a fit bird to present it.
And cut every 2 seconds to a different shot.
Oh, I thought you said cat every 2 seconds. I was thinking
cat, and a cat every 2 seconds.
Cat every 2 seconds is like
that's
a BBC 3
one of the basic seconds. Requirements for yeah. commissioning a BBC 3 series. Is there a cat every 2 seconds?
No, there's a girl called Cat.
Or an actual cat.
Or an actual cat every 2 seconds. That'd be weird.
If you've only got a cat every 5 seconds, then it's off to BBC 4.
They do cut fucking quickly. Apparently, I've got a friend who works in the television. Not actually in the television. She works in the industry of television.
She'd have to be very small.
She doesn't. She's not just there. Like anyway, she says that her friend edited Top Gear. Not very well. I want to cull the contents out. But satirised. But apparently there are over 2,000 cuts in sort of an hour of Top Gear.
Wow. Is that just getting out of each scene before Jeremy Clarkson says something racist?
No, I think that's actively encoded. Oh, have you ever you know that little one from Top Gear who's now grown his hair long so he looks more like the other ones?
Who's on the advert for the thing?
Yeah, for the sort of, yeah. Like, I shop at Morrison's. No, bollocks, you don't. You're a multi-millionaire, you don't shop at Morrison's. Like, not even shop at Morrison's.
It shows him tramping all over the place with a trolley, despite the fact...
That's that unrealistic as well.
He's well known for having a car, at least one car. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say I reckon he's got two cars or more. but this advert is him walking all over the countryside with a shopping trolley, yeah. Over cattle grids and stuff.
Yeah, but that's a flight of fancy, Joel.
Is it?
It's an indicator of just how creative advertising can be.
I think it's a cynical lie.
It's a cynical lie. Anyway, him, he's fucking weird. Have you seen pictures? There's a picture of him on a girder in London, on the Cheeb adverts.
A picture of him on a girder? Do you mean there's a photograph in which he is sitting on a girder? Or do you mean a picture of him has been painted or somehow applied to an actual girder?
The former, but the latter would be, you know, worth a peek, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. See, I mean, girders are the last place you expect to see B-list celebrities portrayed.
Well, I think in the national scene, I'd say he's probably an A-list celebrity. In the national scene, not in the world scene.
You end your A's and you start your B's. I mean, I think that's indicative of grade inflation, isn't it? I mean, it's getting easier and easier to get an A as a celebrity.
Yeah, it's like them CDOs that caused the big worldwide crash that they told us about on This American Life.
It's a lot like that.
Everyone's a AAA+, but they've only ever been on Big Brother.
The whole thing's become meaningless.
So do you think the celebrity culture might have a similar worldwide crash?
Because all the ratings are out of whack.
It's possible. Mm. But anyway, Richard Hammond, there's a picture of him sitting on a girder, and it's like an advert for something he's doing on Discovery Channel that no one's going to watch apart from like dads. Dads who like going to the Lotus Factory, you know.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, so he's got his long hair, which is not good on a man because he's a man who's like everyone's sort of just without really thinking about it. But he's probably in his 30s or 40s. Right, he's just got his probably he's a bit cheeky looking. He's got short hair, whatever. But now he's grown his hair a bit long, which is a really bad idea because it makes him look like an old woman basically. And because he basically like has got no brain left because of that accident he had, and he's just like an animated puppet because no one wants him to die. It's like Weekend at Bernie's basically. Clarkson and James May are operating.
Top Gear is not the same as Weekend at Bernie's.
No, it's not as
good. That's libelous.
So anyway, but his eyes are like he's got loads of Botox. Whatever. His eyes are really white. He looks fucking scary. You should look at the picture. It's the program's called Richard Hammond's Great Big Construction Projects or something. It's something dads would watch.
Yeah. I've got a feeling that's not the real title.
It's actually remarkably close to that. so he's that, but he looks good. But the reason I mention him is, have you ever heard him speaking but without seeing his little cheeky chappy face?
Unless he's done advert voiceovers, and I'm not.
It's a strange. It's a very strange thing, John, because I heard him on the radio because he went to Cheltenham Literary Festival, which I'm not even going to go into. But he was on the radio.
Oh, that's not a great advert for Cheltenham Literary Festival. Not a good slogan, is it? Cheltenham Literary Festival. I'm not even going to go into it.
Well, it's a great literary festival. I'm a fan of it. I have been there, but I think Richard Hammond cheapens the experience more than even I do. And anyway, even when I go there, I have to go not like the performance young people's woo sort of programme, as opposed to like
we've heard the proper authors. Now here's a funny poet.
Anyway, so he's there, and they did. I was driving through Hereford and Worcester last
both
week.
You were driving through one.
I drove through both, but the reason I mentioned both is because when you drive through Hereford and Worcester, the BBC haven't deigned to give them each their own radio station. Not like Radio Essex, his own one, didn't have to share with Suffolk, but Hereford and Worcester, sure. Herefordshire, but it's called BBC Hereford and Worcester. And that's the radio station. There's some goon on there who's clearly like, this is cream in his pants, because he got to do an interview with Richard Hammond. He was like, and who did he grant the interview with? And BBC Hereford and Worcester? Like, well, not quite like that, but you know what I mean.
I'm getting a very skewed picture of the output of BBC Hereford and Worcester.
Richard Hammond has the voice. He has the voice of like a retired army colonel. Like no word of a lie. Like, it's not just posh. It's just sort of ridiculously plumbing to the point where he might just keel over at any point. Well, my job's afforded me to be able to write a book. Look, hey, I'm not gonna pretend I'm a literary star. You know, it's just great. Who wouldn't pass up the opportunity to write? It, literally like that. I couldn't believe it.
Do you think that's natural, or do you think that's the result of brain injury following his high-speed crash?
I don't know, but then I did some research on Richard Hammond. I went on his Wikipedia page, not his.
So you live a full life.
Yeah, I do. So I went on his Wikipedia page, and he did go to a private school, but it didn't seem to be like a really, really private kind of school. It wasn't really so posh.
Not completely private.
Not completely. There's one door
where people can come
in. It was completely private, but I'm not sure how much of it was conducted behind closed doors. I don't know. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it was posh.
A confidential
school. Well posh. He's well... But the thing is, like, you see him, and I'm not saying I like him, but you kind of go, oh, he's a cheeky chappy. He's one of us. He's like a normal kind of guy. He's not. He's well posh. That was all I wanted to say about Richard Hammond, I think.
How did we get onto the subject?
No idea.
So there's this Japanese restaurant in a lay-by.
There is this Japanese restaurant at lay-by, which is existent between Norwich and Nottingham.
Geographical midpoint, yeah. And our original intention was to meet up there and record a podcast, possibly in the car park, if we didn't have enough money to buy a meal. But then, you know, we kind of realised that we're living in the 21st century. No one meets up in a lay-by anymore. There's the internet for that, you know. All the reasons that people might want to meet up in lay-by.
You say that because of gaydar, like people wouldn't need to like wank themselves off of urinals in public places anymore. It still happens. Like the other day, having a wee at Liverpool Street, you know, where you have to pay 30p for the privilege.
Is it 30p now?
30p now, yeah. God, you haven't weed for a while at Liverpool Street. It's been,
well, it was 20p the last time I weed.
Fucking hell, yeah. Cast.
Have they got Dyson hand dryers, though?
They have the Dyson hand dryers, so you kind of think...
That's worth it. That's worth the entry price alone. Even if you don't need a wee, yeah. Pay your money and go in and have a go. They're brilliant.
No, but I went in there and, like, just typically, like, thinking about poetry and stuff, and I'm surrounded... by lots of men wanking, like lots of men wanking themselves, or about six, which I think is quite a lot of men in one place.
Six is one of those numbers that doesn't sound like a lot until you apply it to strangers masturbating in a toilet.
Every time I say a number, you've got to think about a different man wanking himself off. One.
Okay.
Two. Three.
Right.
Four.
Blimey.
Five. Six. So that's quite a lot of men wanking themselves off within what I would say was a 5 metre squared sort of area.
You make it sound like the area had been marked out, maybe with masking tape on the floor.
That's the thing, it hasn't been. It's marked out for people to have a wee, isn't it, Joe? It's not been marked out for them to, you know... I ain't got a problem with people wanking each other off and all that sort of stuff, but, like, it was rush hour at Liverpool Street Station, the busiest stations in the country. Like, aren't they meant to, like, find some, like... derelict little, like, you know, toilet somewhere under a bridge somewhere and do it there. Isn't that more fun for them to actually sort of do it?
That's typical of the kind of prejudice innocent cottagers have to deal with on a daily basis.
Well, they are innocent. I'm not saying they... Yeah, it's, I wouldn't want any of them to get arrested for it, because there are these signs up saying anyone, like, they're all sort of like plainclothes police officers patrol this area. Anyone found doing something illegal will be handed an on-the-spot fine. And I was thinking, oh, what kind of illegal thing should we do in the toilet?
that applies to drug taking, I'd imagine. Is it actually, I suppose it is illegal to do that to yourself in public, to pleasure yourself manually.
Yeah, public indecency.
I suppose it is. Now, were these men doing it in a cubicle? Oh, sorry, in six cubicles?
No. That would require me to have gone into each of the cubicles and looked. Like,
that was my next question, to be honest.
No, it was like in the urinal thing. They got separate urinals. They probably got five in a row, sort of facing each other. So you could get 10 men with their backs to each other in there, having a wee, all wanking themselves off, whatever was their preference there. But it's just like, I mean, now I know that. I didn't, because I've seen people cottaging before, but like, not like at Liverpool Street Station, like right in the middle of rush hour. There's those people rushing around, you know, because that's what they do at rush hour. So I mean, when rush hour happens, I just go down to Liverpool Street Station, I'd have a fit. It's rush hour, quick.
What I'm interested in is, do you think when you're on your way to Liverpool Street Station at rush hour, with the intention of masturbating in a toilet, when you're on your way, do you think you have to kind of prepare what you're going to imagine, what you're going to envisage, how you're going to psychologically stimulate yourself? Or do you think you just go into the public toilet and let nature take its course? Because that is not a sexy environment, with the best will in the world.
No, but I think for some people it is a sexy environment, which is why in the era of gaydar and sort of, you know, much more... You know,
Hang on. You said this twice now. In the era of gaydar, yeah. Is this actually a technological innovation that has passed me by?
Gaydar, correct me if I'm, well, you can't, because you don't even listen about this. I think it was started as a website, like as a dating website, but I know that gaydar now have a app for the iPhone and similar sort of things that works with GPS. So you can work out how close you are to potential fuck buddies.
Please don't say fuck buddies again. Now,
fuck buddies.
That does seem very strange. Now
that's what we should have called the podcast. Joel Stickley and Luke Wright, fuck buddies.
I think that might hamper its presence on iTunes.
But what I want to know is do you have a wee first? And then have a wank.
Or do you do it the other way around?
Because it's useful to have a bit of wee left over to clean this, you know, afterwards.
But surely, if you really need a wee, then that probably puts you off the old how's your father a bit.
Exactly, the old how's your father. Then they ask how your father is, Joe. I think that's an inappropriate sort of situation. I presume that phrase did actually come from, you know, like, oh, how's your father? Oh, well, he's falling down the stairs and his gammy legs playing up again. And
he said something
racist in public the other day. And you're like, oh, I'm not going to ask how his father is again, because it's a great big litany of fucking nonsense.
I'm not going to ask how his father is again. I'm just going to do some sex with him. And that's how we got the euphemism.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. So do they have a wee? But they don't need a wee. Maybe they need... Initially, maybe these plainclothes policemen. Are the plainclothes policemen, like, you know, are they gay policemen? Who, you know, it's a bit like it's a bit of a busman's holiday for them. You know, is it that's the wrong phrase. But you know, is it a pleasurable? I don't know.
Are you suggesting that some of those people that you saw pleasuring themselves in the toilet were plainclothes policemen?
Well, what do they do? The police would just sort of walk in there, like, in jeans and t-shirt, just going dip, 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 dip.
Just hanging around,
watching. Or do they come in there and get right, do they go completely undercover?
Deep undercover. Now, imagine that, as a policeman, you know, you grow up as a child wanting to join the police, and you follow your dream, and it's been your ambition since you were little, and you finally, you know, you pass the entrance exams, you go through all the training, you graduate up to quite a senior level in the police, and one day you're told that your beat, your duty that you've been assigned, is to go and hang out at Liverpool Street Station, waiting for people to touch themselves.
Senior policemen. So do you think when they reach, like, you know, do you reckon Sir Ian Blair was like, right, sorry, we've got a job for you?
I don't think he had to do that during work hours.
What are you saying about Surrey and Blair? You're suggesting that he's into a bit of the old culture.
Oh, Ian Blair. Oh, no, sorry, my mistake. It must be a bit off-putting for a policeman. I mean, I'm imagining that's one of the least sought-after duties.
Well, unless you are a secret... Maybe the policeman's like, oh, you've got to go and cottaging watch, and he just thinks, I'm just going to make the sign, stick the sign up and just fuck off and never be there. So maybe the sign's a bit... Because you see the sign, you think... We don't want to get caught. We don't want to get on-the-spot fined. You cock in your head.
You take those signs at face value, don't you? What? They say plain-clothed policemen are on patrol in this toilet.
And you think, yeah, what if they are?
Why would they put the sign
Exactly. But the guy who puts the sign up goes back and his boss goes, have you arrested any cottagers? And he's like, sign's doing a great job. I've been there all day and he's just across the road in Dirty Dicks.
But what if there's someone whose particular peccadillo is plain-clothed policemen? I mean, that as itself could be construed as an erotic scenario.
Well, it's a peccadillo, I think. This is like a sort of Russell Brandy type word for pecs. Yeah? The old peccadillo.
Peccadillo.
Peccadillo is a good word. I don't think we've used the word peccadillo in our podcast before. So is it, you're saying someone's peccadillo is playing for the police? And it's just like the guy's trying to give him on the spot fire and he's just getting more and more excited.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Until he's dragged out of there.
So... There's a Japanese restaurant in Leibai.
Yes, there is. There's a Japanese restaurant in Leibai.
On the A17, yeah. Which is at the which is equidistant from Norwich and Nottingham, roughly speaking. And so we were going to meet up there and record our podcast. Before we realised that in this modern age of silicon chips and pens... And microphones with magnets in. You can do this kind of thing on computers.
What do you mean microphones with magnets in? What does that mean?
Well, I'm just saying, you know, microphones have magnets in.
Do they?
Yeah, that's how microphones tend to work.
Oh, that's fascinating. Tell me how they work.
Well, they, as far as I understand it, the vibration... a microphone is basically a loudspeaker in reverse. And on a loudspeaker, you've got electrical current going up to a little set of magnets. And when the electricity gets to the magnets, it makes the magnets vibrate. And the magnets are attached to a big paper cone. And when they vibrate, the big paper cone vibrates. And depending on the speed of its vibration, it makes different sounds. And that's how you get loudspeakers and microphones... As far as I understand it,
makes them work really, really
the opposite way around. So you talking vibrates
amazing,
a little,
isn't it?
Whatever it is.
It's just various things vibrating is making my voice sound exactly how my voice sounds. Well, maybe not. The things people go, oh, I don't sound like they always think, doesn't they sound different on tape? And Richard Hammond, for example, sounds really posh. The microphones are so that they're a bit like he knocks them in a weird way.
Are you suggesting that in real life... He sounds like he's
a habit. Yeah, Richard Hammond. No, I'm alright. No, I'd be crashing everything, but I'm alright now. Yeah, look at my eyes.
But as soon as he listens to himself back on like the outgoing
he's
message
like,
on the answer phone, for example.
Richard Hammond, had a bit of a crash.
Richard Hammond,
look at my eyes. That's what he's like. Honestly, listen to Richard Hammond without
just as an artifact of the recording.
I think actually he sounds like that always, but because you look at his little cheeky chappy face, and, oh, look at his little chippy chappy face, look at his little cheeky face, look at his cheeky face, you don't hear how posh he is, because you just go, oh, look at his face. That's what I do anyway.
How remarkable. The human brain is a wonderful thing.
So anyway, we're not at the Imperial Bento, but maybe one day we'll go on a crazy Gorman-esque style adventure and actually do like a special actually from the restaurant. Maybe. I'm not saying we might do that. We might do that, Joel. It might be fun.
We might do that. So the way we're recording this podcast is we're talking on the phone and each of us is recording our end of the conversation. And then when we've finished, we will marry those two recordings up to create the magic of podcasts.
Tell them about the brilliant idea I had, which I borrowed from the movie industry, about how we could marry up those two separate streams of sound.
Luke had a brilliant idea.
It was a brilliant idea.
We clap to make a marker on the tape, and that's how you know where the two recordings fit together.
Fucking
brilliant. Where the clap comes.
Brillo pad.
So there we go. That's the behind-the-scenes documentary featurette for Joel Stickler and Luke Wright at the Imperial Bento.
Cool. So, Joel, what's on the podcast menu for today? See, I'm making...
You're making reference to the restaurant in the lay-by, which we described so succinctly.
I would argue that we've already had drinks and hors d'oeuvres. Maybe move on to our starter course.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's an extended metaphor that's going to last the distance, to be honest with you. I've got a joke for you.
Yes.
I'll save that. I'll tell you my joke later on because
save that. We'll have it as a little sort of a palate cleanser between me, or like a sorbet, like a joke sorbet.
Again, I think you'll find life is a lot easier if you let go of this metaphor.
Okay. Let go.
Okay. So yeah, I've got a joke for you. Try not to get too excited. We will come to that later.
Try not to wank in a public toilet about it.
Maybe if there's a particularly awkward silence later, maybe where you've just said something offensive about cottaging, for example. And
What offensive thing can I say about cottaging?
Well, I think just mentioning it at all is fairly offensive.
Someone like that. Well, yeah.
So there's a Japanese restaurant in a lay-by.
There's a Japanese restaurant in a lay-by, and that's where we are in spirit, if not in body.
Well, that was possibly the longest introductory spiel to any podcast ever.
So, do you want to talk about Hello, Hello?
Worst way to start a conversation ever.
Hello, hello. This is Nighthawk. That's at least the same.
Yeah, this is
The fleshy knobs.
This is a British comedy programme from the 1980s, set in a French resistance cell during World War II. Is that right?
Well, it's set in a cafe, mostly in a little town, which is, I think it's called Nouvion or something like that. That might be where my parents will go on holiday in France.
Do they go there because it's in Hello, Hello?
No, I think I only know two French places, Nouvion and... But I know more than two French places, I'm not going to be able to pull that one off. But anyway, I think it was in Nouvion. Anyway, but it's mostly set in René Artois' cafe. René Artois, played by Gordon Kay.
And this is a programme that... In the past, you know, we've not had disagreements about, but haven't quite seen eye to eye on, because...
Well, I used to watch it with my parents. It was, I think it was on a Sunday evening, about 5 o'clock, and it was one of those sort of, you know, what later became the Lovejoy slot.
And to the best of my knowledge, I never watched Hello, Hello when I was growing up, so it doesn't have any kind of appeal.
It wasn't like it was some sacred thing in our house. It wasn't like it was our religion. It wasn't like, we'd go into, you know, it wouldn't... Do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like...
This is just something that I genuinely don't understand the appeal of. So I think in the interest of bridging that gap, I've got the Wikipedia entry for Hello, Hello here. If I ask you about each character, maybe you can fill me in on what I need to know about that particular character to enjoy the programme. So first up, René François Artois.
René Artois, played by Gordon Kay. He's the main character. He's this sort of balding, overweight French cafe owner. He's a bit of a coward and doesn't really want to get involved in the war, and can see the German occupation just a way of him making more money, and he's quite fine. He's got two servant girls who work for him in the cafe who he's having an affair with, and keeps like playing them off against his, you know, like a secret affair, and they both think he's going to leave his wife for them, but he's not really going to leave his wife, or he doesn't really want to leave his wife because it's just too much hassle. Like he's a typical sort of, not in my backyard kind of guy. Like, he gets caught up with the resistance, and the resistance want him to sort of do all these things and get involved in all these plots, and he just wants to sort of like, just wants to keep a quiet life, and actually gets on quite well with the two German guys who are occupying.
So it says here in his Wikipedia entry, it says, René does not care much for his mother-in-law, often referring to her as a silly old bat.
Yes.
That sounds pretty funny. Can you tell me about that?
Well, his mother-in-law lives upstairs, and she's kind of bedridden. She's played by Rose Hill, I believe.
Hang on. Oh, yes, Madame Fanny Le Fan. It's pretty funny, though.
Madame Fanny Le Fan. It's funny because...
She's got the word Fanny in her name.
Yeah, she has indeed. And she's a very old lady. She talks like this. Oh, will no one come to the aid of an old lady? Like that. That's what she does.
Brilliant. And it says in her entry here, she hates the Gestapo, as evidenced by her saying, "The Gestapo, I hate them." That sounds pretty funny.
Yeah, I think really what you're satirising here is the Wikipedia entry more than the actual programme. When you take a quote from a comedy programme out of context like that and said, from this quote, we can see that it tells us this. It kind of makes the whole quote seem worse than it originally was. And it was quite bad in the first place, I'll admit.
There's no reason that we should focus on the catchphrases here. Okay, for example, Edith Melba Artois, Renee's wife.
Played by the great Carmen Silvera, of course.
It says here...
can't sing. That's the big joke.
Her singing is so bad that the locals stick cheese in their ears to block out the terrible sound.
They'd stick cheese in their ears.
They're French. Cheese is literally all they have to hand.
No, they have. Yeah, they've lots of cheese. And she sings, and she's very bad. And she thinks she's wonderful, and she reminds her of her days. And she's a bit old, and she's a bit sort of. Can you find a picture of Carmen Silvera on the internet? You'll have a look at it. She's like,
there she is.
Yeah, I think she was probably one of the best known people in the whole sitcom. She had quite a long career before that. I think had done some Carry On or something like that. A few of them had done a bit of Carry On, but I think she was certainly well respected with the industry. And that actually is great, like her facial expressions, and she's very good in it. What the show lacks in script, it makes up for in, I think, superb comic acting. So there we go.
Well, it's basically the same thing that happened with Dad's Army, which I believe was also written by the same guys. Dad's Army went for its whole run without anything funny being put into the script, except "Don't tell him your name, Pike," which includes his name, that you know the name Pike in the sentence, thus rendering the command irrelevant. But it's the characters that bring it alive, and the performances that the cast put in.
Yeah, totally. And I think these days most comedy is made by stand-up comedians who have gone on to become television actors. And so whilst they're acting, might be they can do a certain thing. They're not the versatile, you know, real actors. You know, like in these days. So I think you're right. And the acting is fantastic and really kind of like just right. Done in a good hammy way.
Do you want to hear my joke?
Yes, I think it's time for your joke. Yes, definitely, it's your joke.
Okay, are you ready for the joke?
I am fucking well ready.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you a question. Now, the premises upon which the question is founded might initially seem unlikely, but I think you'll be pleasantly surprised by the answer to the question. Which, of course, while I'm asking you to guess, I don't actually expect you to be able to guess.
Okay, right, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Why is an enthusiastic cowboy similar to an even-handed pimp?
I don't know. Why is an enthusiastic cowboy similar to an even-handed pimp?
Because he wouldn't knock a good hoe down. Because he wouldn't knock a good hoe down. That's my job.
I don't get it. Well, okay, you've done your section, right? Okay, because we've got a new podcast, we're trying to do sections. So Joel's going to do a joke every week.
Yep, that was my joke.
Yeah, and so I'm going to do my section, which is accents of the world, isn't it, Joel? You're going to ask me.
Yep.
We haven't prepared this, okay? Well, we have. Obviously,
no.
I've been in training, but I don't know what Joel's going to ask me, and he's going to have to ask me, and I'm going to have to do an accent, and I need to say something to make it equally even more difficult. I have to say something appropriate to the country of the accent that I'm doing. So the possibility for it being jingoistic and a bit xenophobic are doubled, basically. And my
child basically just adds to the excitement of the feature.
Exactly. So I'm ready, Joel. I'm ready at this end.
Okay. On today's podcast, Luke, I'm going to ask you to impersonate the accent of someone from Brazil. Someone from Brazil.
I'm from Brazil. I just had a Grand Prix here.
Very good. Brilliant. I can't fault that, obviously.
What was that? I'm from Brazil. It's a bit Mexican, wasn't it? It's like, I'll lay your carpet for you. Andale. No, is it? No?
I don't think it was at all Mexican. I think it was Brazilian.
Was it Brazilian? I thought, do you want to hear my thought process behind it?
Please do fill me in.
It's that Brazilians speak Spanish or some sort of, you know, derivative.
I think it's Portuguese.
It's Portuguese, wow. Which, you know, same thing. And
effectively. If you can't speak either, then yes, they're the same thing.
So I thought maybe that kind of accent would do it. And there was just a Grand Prix in Brazil, wasn't there? Wasn't there a Grand Prix in Brazil?
A Formula One Grand Prix, fact, whilst not the final Grand Prix of the Formula One season, certainly the decisive.
It has been decisive for Jenson Button. I like Jenson Button. I think he's all right. Do you know why I like him, Joe? You know this, don't you? Because I think he's got a sense of irony and he'd be all right to have a drink with down the pub.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there we go. Well done. Brazilian accent, I would give you 10 out of 10, I think.
10 out of 10? Oh, that's fucking brilliant. I'm going to write that on my CV.
You can write it on your the chalkboard painted wall of your new office.
I fucking can. 10 out of 10. I can chalk them all up and take a picture maybe 10 weeks down the line. 10 weeks. Now, I've got a dilemma. Before we go, but this is a new feature. We can have a new feature. Luke's Dilemma of the Week. And I'm going to give you the dilemma. And you need to give me a sensible and yet vaguely amusing and entertaining solution to said dilemma. Okay?
Are you asking me?
Are you asking
the listeners?
Well, if the listeners want to write in, they can. But I mean, you know, I'm asking you really, Joel, because you are the fountain of all knowledge and wisdom. But basically, my dilemma is this, okay? And I'm not going to try and be funny and go, Israel-Palestine. I'm not going to do that, okay?
This is a genuine problem from your actual genuine life.
Okay,
contrary to popular opinion, you do live.
Yeah, so I done this telly program in February, and I wrote all these poems. And
I remember it well.
Yeah, and what I had to do is sort of take people's love stories or lack of love stories and turn them into a poem. And one of the people we did was a guy called Andy Jones. He wrote the column in the London paper called Man About Town, and he basically wrote about all these dates he went on, and you know what a hilarious lad about town he was. I read all loads of his articles, and the poem we're going to write was just a young, free and single kind of poem. So I took lots of stuff he'd said in his articles and, you know, and some things that happened to him, and I turned it into a poem. I composed four stanzas of poetry about it, and he apparently was very pleased with it, loved it, really enjoyed performing it. He performed it all to camera. He didn't do a bad job. Obviously, it wasn't, you know, obviously as good as what I'd have done, but, you know, it was all right. It was fine, and it was a part of the programme that people liked. So I saw Zara, who was the director, wonderful director, the other day, and we were having a chat, and she went, "Oh, I forgot to tell you, have a look at Andy Jones's website." So I went on Andy Jones, andyjones.me.uk, or Andy Jones Journalist, or whatever it is. And yes, on his biography, he said, "Oh, some TV, most notably Seven Ages of Love on Channel 4, where I was asked to compose and perform a poem about my the male attitudes towards dating."
This is what happens when you let other people read your work out loud.
Compose. Like, what a cock. I think that's a cockish thing to do, isn't it? Because he didn't compose that poem. I composed that poem. And now he's got it on his website. So, what do I do? How shall I approach this? Because he's contravening, let me just try and work, it's a certain part of the Patents and Copy Right Act.
You're struggling to remember the year, but you have actually been in a similar situation before.
It is Section 16 of the Copyright Designs and Patent Act 1988. The Act restricted by copyright work. The only the copyright is work has in accordance with the following positions, blah, blah, blah. So he's broken that. He's basically said...
he's claimed your work as his own.
Yeah. No. So the right to be identified as the author. It's section 77 of the Copyright and Patents Act. Yeah, the author of the He's not identified.
Notwithstanding the exact legal designation of the offence committed, I think you basically have two courses of action open to you. The first and more sensible course of action, if slightly dull, is that you would contact him, saying that you think there's been a misunderstanding and asking politely that he changes the copy on his website and perhaps issues a retraction.
Yep.
The second course of action is that you record yourself reading a series of his articles from his newspaper, put it on YouTube, claiming that you are a columnist for whichever newspaper it is he is a columnist for, and that here you are reading some of your own work, including in that a link to his website where he makes similar claims about your work. Basically, that's the, doing unto him as he has done unto you kind of response. Obviously, that's not applicable for all crimes.
You wouldn't
punish a drug dealer by selling them drugs.
You wouldn't punish a rapist by having the rape victim rape them back, because that I think they'd enjoy that.
But you can punish a copyright infringer by infringing their copyright. I think that's doable.
Yeah, but I don't really want to claim his work as my own.
This is the problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
It would actually probably degrade your image by claiming his work as your own.
I did not say that. Andy Jones, if you're listening, I did not say that, but I don't want to claim his work as my own, I'll put it that way. So I think basically, but it's the retraction thing I'm sticking on, because it's like, making a missionary retraction, it's just like, stop doing that and apologise, which is fair enough, actually, but like, that's the sort of thing that would make him be a bit... Well, you know how, like, Hitler came to power, don't you?
Hang on. This has escalated pretty quickly.
Well, basically...
We've been discussing this before.
It's Versailles, isn't it? It's Versailles. But asking him to take it down is one thing. Issue with retractions is a bit Versailles. It's Hall of Mirrors, isn't it? You know, is it going to upset him to the point where I'm making... I don't want to make an enemy out of the guy. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to hang out with him. But, I mean, I don't want to make an enemy out of the guy. I just think he's been really cheeky, and yeah, that's what I'm saying. Do you see what I'm saying? I don't want to, you know.
I do see what you're saying.
Quite frankly, so who wants a website on which where they're advertising their work, on which they go, I lied about having written this poem, which I didn't actually write. I am a liar, and I lied to make myself look good to the detriment of someone else. Like, no one wants to put that on their web. That's a hugely detrimental thing to have on his website. And what would be a long...
It is the truth, however.
It is the truth. I don't think...
Well, look, I don't think we're going to be able to resolve this issue.
It's a difficult dilemma. It was a genuine dilemma. Do you like the fact it was genuine dilemma? Do you want
I like the genuine comic dilemma feature. I think it's good. So I think what we need to do is appeal to anyone who might be listening. I mean, I'm saying that like it's an emergency broadcast from an abandoned radio tower in the middle of a small Pacific island. Anyone who might be listening, please do get in touch with us. Many ideas you might have about resolving the situation.
5, 12,
21, 23. So the email address to send your suggestions for resolving this situation to is imperialbento@gmail.com. Right. Bento is B-E-N-T-O. Imperial, you'll be able to find in any good dictionary.
Yeah, definitely. We would not be able to find bento in a dictionary.
I'm not sure. Probably not a concise dictionary. I'm not sure. I don't think it's one of those.
I've got a bento box for my lunch. I think that's it.
Lovely. I'm not sure it's one of those terms that's made its way into common usage enough to be featured in the dictionary. But maybe.
Those boffins at the Oxford dictionary people.
Those boffins at the Oxford. Yeah.
Those boffins at the Oxford. So, I mean, that just about concludes our podcast for this week, Joel. What do you think?
I think so. I mean, I one thing I was going to tell you about my week. My wife is currently teaching a reception class at a primary school, which is ages 4 to 5. One of her pupils came up to her the other day and said that so-and-so and thingy, let's call them Kayleen and Kadora, because that's the kind of names they have, are being rude, they're causing trouble, can you come over and stop them? So she went over to the play area where they were and found these 2 4-year-old girls lying on their backs with their legs up in the air, making loud farting sounds and pretending to projectile poo across the room. Now, in the current thinking in early years education is that the best way to impose discipline is to try and frame everything in a positive way. So rather than just saying, stop that, you present an alternative behaviour strategy which you can then positively reinforce. If someone is beating up someone else to take a toy off them, you don't just say, stop it, you say, why don't you ask if you can have the toy when he's finished with it? Now, that's all very well for a situation like that, but when there's 2 4-year-old girls lying on their backs with their legs in the air, making loud farting sounds and pretending to projectile poo across a room, there's not really an alternative behaviour that can achieve the same outcomes. they've kind of adopted the optimum strategy already.
Well, I you know what I'd do? I would give them off food until they actually genuinely projectile poo and see how much they like it then.
That might be considered a little draconian, to deliberately give children food poisoning in order to punish them.
Political correctness gone mad.
It is gone mad, isn't it? So she said something along the lines of, now, please stop, because we don't do that. Which I think is perfectly fair. She's outlining for them the only reason they shouldn't do that, which is that in polite society, as adults, it's not the done thing and that they need to learn that.
Yeah.
But when she came home and told me about what had happened, I couldn't stop laughing because I think that if I could get away with lying flat on my back with my feet in the air and making loud farting sounds and pretending to projectile poo across a room, in a work environment, then I would. And it just goes to show that sometimes, just sometimes, we shouldn't teach people anything.
Exactly. Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. And in fact, I'm in my office, got it to myself. I think when I put the phone down, Joel, I might just have a little sneaky on the back, legs in the air, projectile poo. Why not? It is, after all, a Wednesday. So that's good. So what have you learned this week, Joel? What have you learned from the podcast?
I've learnt an awful lot about cottaging, and I've learnt a fair amount about the 1980s television series Hello, Hello. I hope one day to be able to combine those two areas of knowledge.
Well, I've actually learnt that I need to brush up on my Hello, Hello, so I'm going to do that this week, and then maybe next week we can do a smaller section where you give me some quickfire questions, and I'll see...
The Hello, Hello trivia challenge. I look forward to it.
Cool. I'll sign off then, Joel. Ta-ra for now.
Bye-bye.